Hello. The next session is going to be about GNOME applications and the fact that some of them wake up every few seconds or so, or even every few milliseconds. Sorry?
All sorts of applications are guilty of this, huh?
Yeah, and others, I suppose. So I'll present here. We've got here Ryan Lawty from the GNOME Foundation to talk about those for you. I'll hand you straight over to him to start.
Hello. So it's officially confirmed. It has been snowing in Canada. I'm very happy about that. I get to go home to lots of snow. Just unlock this. Yeah, I will be very sick, I think. Oh, no. Okay, so burning CPU and battery on the GNOME desktop. So why am I here today? Oh, I have this wonderful mouse. I should be using it. Well, I'm here for two reasons. We have two sort of problems with applications on GNOME and other desktops, and even them running in the system. But before I get into that, why should you care about this problem that we're having? So first of all, you know, pretty much every chip that exists now, Intel or PowerPC, maybe not embedded platforms, but any interesting chips, when they're not doing work, they use an awful lot less power. You know, when you're compiling your kernel on your laptop and all of a sudden you wonder why your lap is melting, that's because your CPU is using more power when it's active than when it's idle. So we want the CPU to be as idle as frequently as possible. The tickless kernel, which I have good word from a reliable source, that is slated to be included in 2.6.21 will drastically improve the effectiveness of keeping the machine idle. So right now, does everyone know about this HZ timer in the kernel? No? Okay, so there's this HZ parameter in the kernel, and essentially it tells the kernel how often it's waking up. Sort of statically, the kernel sets the interrupt timer in the system to wake up this frequently. So with the tickless kernel, this tick goes away, for all intents and purposes, and the kernel will only wake up when it actually needs to wake up to do something. So, you know, if it gets an interrupt from some hardware device, or if some user space application has asked it to wake up, only then will it wake up. So we want to reduce how often user space applications are asking the kernel to wake up. OLPC, you know, it does this microsleep thing. It can, you know, drift off to sleep really quickly. Obviously, if applications keep pulling it from sleep, it's not going to be good. So, polling is increasingly expensive when you have these low power devices which employ all these nice tricks. You know, if you have very low power, even if you're using just a little bit of power, that's a lot in the grand scheme of things. And even on your own laptops, you will see advantages from this. You know, you'll probably get half an hour more out of your battery or something like that. So it's going to be pretty nice if people, you know, clean up their act. So the problem, of course, is polling, or the first problem that I'm going to talk about anyway. So at this point, I'm going to ask you to please hold your questions. Don't interrupt my talk. I'll just ask you every 10 seconds if you have any questions. Any questions? Any questions now? Right, so this is pretty ridiculous, right? So we really don't want our applications doing this. You know, just sit tight, and I'll let you know if I have something I want you to do. Don't nag me. So why do applications want to pull? Really? No good reason. There's really no reason you should be pulling. Except, you know, if you have to do something outside of the system, like you're looking for some web page to update or something, and it's really out of your hands. And say what? That's not a good reason. It's not a valid reason. I'm getting to that. Why do applications think they want to pull? Okay, so by and large, the really often common thing is that they're monitoring for file changes. They think that stat is a wonderful API to find out when a file is changed. So, you know, they wake up every now and then they stat the heck out of stuff. So this isn't so good. Another really common one is a poorly written main loop. So people will, you know, they have glib, but they're like, if I use glib, those KDE people won't use my program. So they decide to just completely reinvent the wheel and write their own main loop. Yes! James and I were, where's James? Hi, James. We were looking at some programs earlier today, and there's a certain program, what's it called, DHC? It's a soup of letters to me. But it yes, exactly. But it does something with DHCP, and it's a great example of this poorly written main loop. It runs dbus, and then it wakes up every 5 times a second to check if it has anything to do, which it never does. So then it goes back to sleep. And it also checks if anything has died. So it gets a signal, you know, sig child when this happens, but it wakes up to find out if the signal handler has run or not. It's pretty special. So, yeah, poorly.
Massive race condition as well, because if you check where the signal handler's run and go into select, the signal handler can be run in between the interim time.
This is probably true.
You have to use a pipe.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're doing that. I didn't see any code for it. But either way, it's very bad. And someone should rewrite this to use glib, because glib is fab. OK, so you know, sometimes they actually wake up legitimately to update their display. You know, if the cursor's blinking or something, obviously, this is something that the application needs to do. So maybe this should have been on the other slide, but I really wanted, say what? Well, you know, cursor blink and hardware would be nice. Can we get some? Well, you know, there's been some work on there, too. So check hardware for real-world events. So this is a reason that you might think you want to wake up, but really the hardware should be better than that. So, and you know, there are reasons I can't even begin to guess at. I'm going to show you all something that I absolutely love. I don't know if it's been fixed yet, but it's fantastic. So everyone knows Python. You know, you fire it up, you get this nice prompt. I wonder what Python's doing. Well, it's just sleeping, right? Well. Say what? Oh, it is?
Yeah.
Oh, OK, so read line. Good job. Congratulations. Really? So it's waking up quite often. I don't think Bash is doing it, actually, because it never shows up. So yeah. Bash doesn't show up when I'm running my tools, so. It has evaded my wrath. OK, so some examples of stuff that has been fixed. GNOME VFS. So what GNOME VFS used to do is, because of how iNotify works, you register a watch on, you know, a couple of directories, say. And for example, one of the events it supports is a file gets moved. So you get one event delivered to the directory from which it got moved from, and one event delivered to the directory that it got moved to, a move from and a move to event. They have this sort of magic cookie ID. And if you're smart enough, you can see that the cookie's the same on both of these events and merge these into a single logical event and deliver that as a moved event. So GNOME VFS was doing this. And in order to do this, it had this timer running in the background that would sort of look at this queue of events and see if there were any in there that matched and see if there were any in there that were past a certain age and just, you know, throw them out. And it was running this timer all the time, and it was quite frequent. So that's really fixed. So that's gone. It only runs when it needs to now, and even then it's somewhat less frequent. VTE, it was sort of nice. Here's another example. It has cursor blink. In the preferences dialog box, it has a little checkbox you can say, I don't want my cursor blinking. I'm not a fan of that. The timeout continued to run even when that was checked, or unchecked, rather. And even when you switched windows, so the cursor wasn't active anymore, it would continue to run that timer. So, you know, this is another example of something. GNOME System Tools backend. Now, this is really my favorite one. This is a funny story about GNOME System Tools backend. So it was waking up 20 times a second, 20 times. And what was it doing when it woke up? Well, it was checking for file changes in except. So GNOME System Tools, well, hold on. It gets a lot better than this. So 20 times a second, it was looking, has except group changed? Has except host changed? You know, all the things that you can do with GNOME System Tools, it really had to make sure that it knew what was going on. Now, the funny thing is, OK, so it's waking up and statting all these files, right? No. It was using fam. So it was waking up to see if fam had told it anything. So we have this wonderful program that allows us to not poll all the time by reporting events to us when they occur. And you know, they're using it by, OK, do I have anything to read from this socket? No. Do I have anything to read from this socket? No. Poll, please. And FAM isn't even installed. And it's doing it anyway. So actually, it was waking up 20 times a second to do absolutely nothing. So, you know, I filed that bug on Launchpad, and I filed that bug upstream. And they were both very, very good about fixing that very rapidly. So some examples of stuff that are hard to fix. And I'm going to give more examples here, because this is sort of the more interesting case. GNOME VFS. So it's on the list again. So why is GNOME VFS hard to fix? The thing with iNotify is that it's not based on file names. It's based on inodes. So if a file does not yet exist, you don't know what inode it's going to have. And even if you did, it wouldn't let you just give it a number, because that would be a security risk. So if a file doesn't yet exist, you can't monitor for it to be created with inode.
Okay, you want to stretch?
I'll get to that. For now, we're going to pretend that Scott is not so smart. So nobody's saying anything about this grand idea, so you can't do that. So it has to pull, you know, every 4 seconds, I think it does it now, to see if a file pops into existence. Not so good. The clock applet. So ideally, I have the seconds disabled. It should update itself once a minute. But in reality, we have two problems. One problem is that the user could change the time zone that they're in. The other problem is that the user could change the time of the system. And then we would have to wait around for 60 more seconds, possibly, before that was reflected on the clock applet. Yeah. Well, right, but the system time, if the system time changes, that's immediate. Yes, it is. Oh, he is saying that it doesn't check the time every minute.
No, it literally has a timer that updates its number of seconds internally and does it get time of day once a minute.
Really? Well, that's fantastic. Even better. I don't know if that's true, though. Okay, well. So the IA10 driver. Hi, how you doing?
I deleted this.
Oh, you did?
Oh, absolutely.
Awesome. Well, would you like to tell us about it then?
Okay.
Keith is at my talk. It's awesome.
Yeah, the Intel laptop driver was actually checking to see if the lid had been closed or the monitor switch monitor change button had been pressed to reconfigure your laptop. We've gotten rid of all of this now because we have an application that you can actually have externally control. So when the button is pressed now, we just run that through the regular kernel keyboard driver, and an application is invoked to check to see if the monitor state needs to be updated. So that's all done asynchronously. In terms of lid switch closing now, there should be an ACPI event now to drive that. But before we could fix the kernel, somebody decided that it was important to have it fixed in the driver anyhow. So they're having the driver pull ACPI into the kernel to see if the lid had been closed or if somebody had pushed the SMI-based monitor switch button. The way that they checked to see if somebody had pushed the monitor switch button was by looking at the video chip to see if the registers related to which monitor was being displayed had been edited by the BIOS underneath the driver. And it did this, like, what, 20 times a second or something?
No, it was actually only once a second. It wasn't that fast.
It was
but
good.
Because of your intelligent timer stuff, it would wake up once a second, and then it would have the,
smart timer.
The interval timer.
Yeah, the interval timer.
Would wake
timer.
It up again.
Yeah.
So it was twice per second, effectively.
Yep.
But it wasn't too bad. And, it was just because there's no way for the kernel to tell X right now. But you fixed it, so it's good.
Yep.
So off the list. GTK Recent Manager. They sort of made a mistake when they decided the API of GTK Recent Manager. They said, we're going to have this changed signal. And this change signal will be emitted whenever the file changes. So this sort of, you know, peg holes them into an API where they absolutely must know when the file has changed. And it's made worse by the fact that under glib, you can tell if somebody's connected to a signal. If you have control of the code, you can say, is someone listening on the signal? But there's no way to be told when someone starts and stops listening. So there's no way to sort of transfer control to yourself to enable the running of a loop when someone starts listening to a signal. So basically, this has to run all the time, even if nobody is connected to the change signal. So it's API. You know, GTK likes to maintain its API. We can't get rid of it. GNOME screensaver. Hi, Keith. So it's waking up once a second to ask the X server if anything's changed. It could do that less frequently. Or we could also have a wonderful... What?
I'm sending signals telling it when things have changed. It's just like...
Well, see, but that's bad for a reason I'm going to get to later. How? So this is another case... Hi. Wow, I'm just like roasting everyone in the room. It's pretty good.
Can I just say at this point, I'm really glad you can't S-trace PID 1.
Yeah, that would be really bad. Okay, so Hal, not David's fault. What happens is CD-ROM drives suck, basically. There's this wonderful specification that says there's this nice command you can call, and the CD-ROM drive will tell you when someone has put in a new disk. In reality, I think there's one CD-ROM drive on Earth. Two CD-ROM drives on Earth that do this properly. And the rest of them, Hal has to pull.
Yeah, I think actually Alan Cox got one of those drives, if you're interested. But with SATA and some FireWire drives, you can actually reliably get an event from the kernel. The thing is, the kernel needs to provide a new interface. It's not enough just looking for hot plug events for partitions showing up, because not all media is partitioned. So there's some work going on. There's fortunately some work going on in that area. So.
Okay, so some timer use that is good. This mostly falls into one class, as far as I know. There are others, you know, like things like the clock that actually use the timer to update their display. But one thing that's going to show up later, and you know, before everyone says this is a terrible application, VTE uses timers incredibly appropriately. And in general, things that use VTE the way that VTE does, or timers the way VTE does, to defer work. So you know, VTE is just getting hammered. Maybe you're running Make or something, or you're catting a large file. And it's like, well, I don't actually have to push all of these things to X. If I sort of save them for a while, and then you know, maybe the same character cell gets written to a couple of times before I actually need to update it at any rate that the user would notice. So it defers work like this. And of course, the thing is, as events are coming in, you don't know if there's you know going to be a sudden stop in the event stream. So you need some sort of a timer that after a while, OK, now we're going to write to the screen. This is a very good use of timers. So how do you avoid polling? Okay, I think I walked a little too far away. So, say what? Yeah, I hear USB is like that. So use iNotify, please. It, you know, there are some problems with it, but it's mostly good. And it's certainly a lot better than, you know, statting a file every now and then. And, you know, this is linux.conf.au, everyone, so don't say iNotify doesn't exist on FreeBSD. We have it, it's good. Poll has a really strange name as a system call, if you think about it, considering it lets you avoid polling. So as a really bizarre hack that they have in the kernel, but a bizarre and wonderful hack, if you open a file in sysfs and you read from it, you can keep this file descriptor around, and you can poll on it. And you can say, you know, poll for read events. And sysfs files are pretty weird to begin with. They're not quite sockets, not quite real files. What will happen is if sort of the conceptual content of this file changes, the kernel will notify you by, you know, emitting, saying, OK, you can read from this file descriptor again, at which point you close the file descriptor, reopen it, and read the updated content. So this is a vastly better alternative to just, you know, reading the file every now and then to see if anything has changed. Mask timers when they're not needed. So, you know, the case of the VTE cursor blink, you know, when it's not needed, just don't run it. And the blink timeout, this is another thing that the OLTC guys did, unrelated to the VTE thing. This is, you know, you have your cursor running in a GTK event input box. And what you do is, after a while, you stop the cursor from running. And, you know, after 60 seconds, you probably don't care if your cursor's flashing anymore. So it just stops. It's nice. And for the love of God, just please use glib. You might think it's a really great idea to write your own main loop, but glib is good. And it's good, I promise. So if you absolutely must pull, there are certain mitigation strategies, approaches you can take. Less pulling is better. You know, you might think that it would be really cool if when this file gets added and for some reason you're pulling for files, when it gets added, it shows up like within a tenth of a second. But the user probably doesn't care too much if it takes, you know, a second to get there. So less is better if you're polling. Use add seconds. What this does is instead of having the timeout run exactly when you say, like if you say g timeout add for 1,000, then exactly 1 second from now, more or less, you will get a call. So you know, based on when you registered g timeout, which is probably just some random function of when your program was started, you have all these timeouts registered to run exactly at these randomly spaced intervals. What addSeconds does is by the API, it runs at an implementation-defined time that's, you know, every 1 second if you ask for it. But in reality, what this will pretty much boil down to is it's going to run it at the top of the second so that it aligns with all the other events that are waking the computer up. So, you know, wake up once, do all you have to do together, and then go back to sleep for a longer period of time instead of sort of waking up a lot all the time. Mask or decrease timer frequency when unneeded. So something that David was talking about for HAL is we have these CD-ROM drives. You know, you have to ask them every 2 seconds, new media yet? New media yet? And with ConsoleKit, we'll be able to tell, is someone logged in? And if nobody is logged in, then, you know, only pull the CD-ROM drive every minute or every 30 seconds rather than every 2 seconds.
And don't
have a CD-ROM
drive.
Say what?
Don't
yes, definitely. Don't pull if you don't have a CD-ROM drive. I think you just spawn off an add-on for...
We actually only pull with three.
So. Yes, but you pull twice if you have two CD-ROM drives.
We need to.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so I said at the beginning of my talk that I'm here for two reasons. So what's the other problem? You know, how do we avoid polling? We have people notify us when events happen. So what's the other problem? Well, excessive notification, unfortunately. So, you know, this is where your point comes in about telling screensaver when something has happened. Really, so, you know, what is this excessive notification? It's really caused by two things, events that wake up too many different processes, and processes being woken up by too many events. And why is this bad? You know, your machine's already awake, but it's going to cause lots of context switching. That's going to take up a lot of your CPU power, and it's going to, you know, prolong the period that your system is using its CPU. So examples of this, in addition to the GNOME screensaver thing, what the API you were talking about would notify GNOME screensaver when an event happened? Oh, okay, so that's good. Okay, I thought you were saying it was going to notify it whenever the user performed an event.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that would be bad. That would be an example of this.
Is it perfect?
Does it exist?
Oh, yeah. I wrote it in 1989.
Well, maybe you should send John an email.
He said it was broken, but he didn't tell me what to do.
Oh. You two should talk more often. Talk to him, please. Okay, so a while ago, every single GTK application on the desktop, this got fixed pretty quickly. I was happy about it. If you went over to your computer and you pressed the control key on your keyboard, every single application on your desktop would wake up. Yeah, that's pretty cool. So as it turns out, there's this sort of shift mask, and you can register an X event to be notified when the modifier mask in the X server changes. No? Well, it was something like this. No, it wasn't that, although we'll get to that later. Actually, very soon, I think. So there was some extra event in the event mask. Whenever the GTK application started up, it asked the X server, send me these events. And it asked for a couple of inappropriate ones, you know, like the shift key always. So even if you just did GTK main and didn't even have a window on the screen, you would get these events. So property notify events on top level X windows. This is really special. Because you know, you have you know, your panel has libwink in it, and it wants to know if the title of a window changes, say. So it asks for a property notify event on the top level window, because the title of the window, for example, is a property of the window in X. And instead of asking all the time, okay, is your title changed, it uses notification. X will tell it, you know, property on this window has changed. Unfortunately, the API in X does not let you watch a specific property, right? Good. Okay. So you have to pretty much watch all of the properties. And mix this with the fact that, you know, this wonderful focus stealing prevention stuff we have. How that works is each window maintains a property of the last time the user interacted with it. So every time you press a key or click a mouse button on a window, a property on that window is changing. And then in turn, that is notifying every single application that's watching properties on top level X windows. So every time you press a key in any window on your desktop, Wink is waking up and your panel is waking up due to this sort of effect. Not so good. Avoid this if you can. I notify for missing files. So, hi, Scott. The reason that iNotify is polling instead of watching the parent directory is because if it did watch the parent directory, it can't tell the kernel, only notify me when this file name is created. It has to be notified for every single file that is created in that directory. So if you were watching, for example, your home